Hey, I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. When you're watching a movie, it can feel really meaningful to see yourself and your community represented on screen. At the end of the hour, we're going to learn about a new crop of films from Vermont, Quebec, and the rest of New England that you can watch on Vermont Public. But first, after a summer spent tromping in the woods, hanging out outside with my family, and yes, playing pickleball, my legs are pretty consistently covered in mosquito bites these days. In the last few weeks, since the news broke about Eastern equine encephalitis, my annoyance at mosquitoes has transformed into worry. Recently, some public events have been canceled, and the Vermont Department of Health strongly recommends the people in high-risk towns avoid spending time outdoors between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. to avoid mosquitoes that could carry the virus. But there are a lot of mosquitoes out there, and so far, there's only been one case of Triple E in Vermont. How worried should we be? Joining us today to help us break down the data is Patsy Kelso. She's the state epidemiologist with the Vermont Department of Health. Patsy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined today by Patty Casey. She's the Environmental Surveillance Program Manager for Vermont's Department of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. Patty, welcome.
Thank you.
And listeners, you can join this conversation as well. If you are like me, you probably have a lot of questions about Triple E. You can call us at 800-639-2211 or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. All right, Patsy, let us start with the very basics. What exactly is Eastern equine encephalitis?
Well, we call it Triple E for short. It's a lot easier to say. Triple E is a virus that's spread by the bite of an infected mosquito. And most of the time, it doesn't make people sick. Most people who are bitten by an infected mosquito don't have symptoms. But around 5% can develop a severe illness, and that can be fatal about a third of the time. So it's a mosquito-borne virus that we need to just pay attention to.
And what are the symptoms?
People who do develop symptoms can have mild illness. So most people have no symptoms. Some people will develop mild symptoms that are pretty nonspecific, things like fever, chills, headache, body aches. Mm. And then less than 5% of people develop severe illness. That can look like very high fever, stiff neck, headache that just keeps getting worse, even seizures and altered mental status. And in those situations with that severe form of illness, it's fatal about a third of the time.
Okay. And tell us about the number of cases that are in not just Vermont, but our region right now.
We have one confirmed human case of Triple E virus so far this season in Vermont. There have also been cases in Massachusetts and one in New Hampshire, and the person in New Hampshire unfortunately died.
Okay. Patty, you have a very important job right now. You are out in the world studying the mosquitoes that can transmit this virus. That's a very simple explanation of your job. Tell us a little bit more about what you do.
Well, we have a statewide surveillance program that tracks mosquito-borne illnesses starting every June and going through October. So we have a great team of folks that join us every year, and we have I think we have at this point 104 established mosquito surveillance sites all around the state. So we have pretty good representation in all the counties. So we have sites where our folks go out generally in a sort of a more normal year once a week, and they will set up what's called a light trap, which attracts host-seeking mosquitoes. And at that site, we also have located resting boxes, which is just a place where mosquitoes that have taken a blood meal and are producing eggs.
Sorry, you saw my grimace.
Yes, I know. Blood meal is not a particularly appealing term, but it is this scientific term. So the females that have fed need to rest while they use the protein that they have taken in to produce eggs. So they will go into these resting boxes. And so when our technicians go out and set the light traps and collect them the next day, they at the same time, they vacuum out those boxes. So we get from the light traps, we get mosquitoes that are looking for a meal. And then from the resting box traps, we get mosquitoes that have already fed. There's another type of trap that we use for West Nile virus surveillance. That's sort of a whole different world. But so we're out there regardless of whether we find Tripoli or West Nile virus in the mosquito population. We do it every year. And so we know now that we have sort of a Tripoli in particular tends to occur over a few years, but then it will go, you know, it will subside for a few years, at least in Vermont at this point. So that's what we're up to.
You brought up West Nile virus. Patsy Kelso, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that mosquito-borne disease. We can differentiate between the two.
Sure. West Nile virus also can cause an asymptomatic infection. Some people don't have any symptoms. Some people develop a mild illness, similar to Tripoli illness, so fever, chills, headache, body aches. And with West Nile, people over age 50, 50, are at higher risk of developing neurologic illness, more severe illness. Again, very similar to the Tripoli illness. But West Nile is not fatal anywhere near as often as Tripoli is.
800-639-2211 is our number. If you have questions about Tripoli or another mosquito-borne illness, how scared are you of catching it, if at all? Are you reconsidering your outdoor plans and want to know if that's a good idea? Again, our number is 800-639-2211. You can also email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Patsy, do we have a scientific understanding of why Triple E is so fatal in these particular instances? It sounds very different than many other diseases. Maybe that's why it's kind of caught on in the media and in kind of the public imagination.
Triple E is certainly more risky because while only a small percentage of infected people develop that severe illness, with Triple E, for some reason, I'm not sure why. It is fatal about a third of the time. And then even among those people who survive that severe form of Triple E infection, about half of them have moderate to severe disabilities that can last the rest of their lives. And often they die within a few years of being infected. Mm. So for whatever reason, pathologically, Triple E is just a more serious illness among those people who, you know, progress to severe illness.
And before we start going and blaming all mosquito kind for this illness, Patty, can you give us some context on how many different types of mosquitoes there are out there in the world? How many species? And which ones are the ones that could carry something like Triple E?
You know, I don't know how many there are in the world. The number 1,500 sticks in my mind, but I could be completely making that up. I can tell you that in Vermont, we have 46 species of mosquitoes.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah, that have been identified. And we don't see all of those all the time. There's a couple dozen sort of characters that are pretty much around most of the time. They show up at kind of in waves, or they can. There are floodplain mosquitoes that their eggs can stay dormant for 7 years until a flood floodwaters may reach high enough in the grass where this particular species lays their eggs. We have one to two. I mean, primary vector, which is the mosquito that helps to amplify the virus in the bird and mosquito population. So and Patsy can talk more about the virus itself. But the my understanding, the virus is it's a bird, primarily eastern equine encephalitis is primarily a bird virus, and it becomes amplified over the course of the summer as more bird feeding mosquitoes, they amplify it within a bird population, so that then what happens is what's known as a bridge vector, which is a more generalist feeder. So they might feed on birds and they might feed on mammals. A bridge vector can pick up a virus from a bird that has it, and then that mosquito may then go feed on a mammal, so a human or a horse, and can transmit the disease at that point. But so in Vermont, I mean, our bridge vectors, we've probably got 8, you know, maybe 10 species of bridge vectors, and some of them are more successful at transmitting a disease than others, but they're both required to the primary vector amplifies it, and the secondary vectors can take it out into the mammal population.
Mm. What positive role, if any, do mosquitoes play in our ecosystem?
You know, they actually do. It's hard to get your head around it sometimes, but their larvae, I mean, most of us have seen swarming mosquito larvae in a body of standing water. That's actually a food source for other larvae of beneficial insects. They also, as adults, they constitute part of the food chain. They're actually also little tiny pollinators. They don't, it's not a, you know, a huge role in their lives, but they, you know, it would probably be noticeable if they were to suddenly be gone from the face of the earth. They do have a role, as awful as they are.
Patsy, there are a couple parts of the state that are considered high risk right now for triple E. Could you tell us about those and how the Department of Health had landed on those areas as places of potentially higher risk?
Yeah, well, in public health, we always follow the data. Mm-hmm. But one of the cool things about public health is how much there always is to learn. And I've learned from Patty and her colleagues over the years tons about mosquitoes. The fact that, as she said, they breed in different places depending on the species, and they bite different animals depending on the species. And so one of the things I've learned is that those vectors that are important for spreading triple E virus between birds, they prefer to breed in acidic hardwood swamps. Patty, correct me if I misspeak.
Absolutely correct.
And so there aren't that many places in Vermont that have that type of habitat, acidic hardwood swamps, where these mosquitoes like to breed. So Patty and her colleagues have been focusing some of their trapping efforts over the years to better understand how many of those types of mosquitoes we have and where they are in Vermont. And that has pretty well aligned with the data in mosquitoes and our human and horse cases that we've had in Vermont over the years. So it tends to be Franklin, Grand Isle County, and then Addison, Rutland County.
Mm. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the high-risk towns for triple E right now include Alberg, Burlington, Colchester, Sudbury, and Swanton.
Correct.
And you note that additional testing could increase those numbers of towns. We have a call from South Royalton. Travis is on the line. Travis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually spent some time in India. Was unfortunate enough to contract dengue fever. Mm. And I'm just curious if there's, you know, sort of similarities in symptoms and severity with things like malaria and dengue fever.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear that, Travis, and I hope you have recovered or are on the road to recovery. Patsy, thoughts there?
Well, I'm not clinical expert. But I think probably some of the symptoms are probably similar across these various mosquito-borne illnesses, in that, you know, fever and body ache, muscle ache, headache, stiff neck. Some of those are common among the severe forms of all of these viral infections. But each probably has their own features as well. And you know, different treatments. Some have vaccines available for people and others don't.
Now, recently, just yesterday, in fact, my colleague Howard Weiss-Tisman got to go out in the field with you, Patty, to learn how exactly you catch mosquitoes in order to study them. He sent us this little audio postcard of your work. Let's take a listen.
All right, so here we are in the woods, and we have I have 10 resting boxes set. We have our 12-volt battery in here, and a fan, and it creates suction. And I'm going to turn on this very loud aspirator and go around and vacuum out the boxes, and we'll carry it all back out to the car. All right, cover your ears. There could be, you know, I don't know, 25 in here maybe. All of these mosquitoes are still alive pretty much when we go back to the car, and then I put them in the bin with dry ice and then they die. But they die happy, I think, because, you know, it's all that carbon dioxide. They must be thinking that they've died and gone to heaven.
Patty, what do you think mosquito heaven is like?
Well, you know, probably a lot of carbon dioxide. That's what they look for.
Carbon dioxide and blood meals.
Right.
We got an email from a listener named Patty in Ludlow who writes, they write, "I'm taking a chance of jinxing myself here, but we've seen very few mosquitoes this summer. We actually were talking about it when we were eating outside a couple of weeks ago. So I guess my question is, why does it seem like so many mosquitoes are in certain areas of Vermont?" And Patty, I'm glad you asked this because anecdotally, I feel like the number of mosquitoes has increased exponentially in my little corner of Burlington. Patty, what's true?
You're both right. Yeah, you're both right. So if you look at a drought map of Vermont, I think NOAA produces a drought map and they keep it up to date. You'll see a dry, it's actually, I think the term is abnormally dry. They're not in drought, but it's an abnormally dry area in Windsor and Windham counties, kind of stretching a little bit over into the middle part of the state. So the lower, you know, southeastern part of the state, it is actually seeing much less mosquito pressure this year, whereas the rest of us we're seeing much higher numbers overall than, you know, based on our historical averages. So that means that the mosquitoes that we are finding in the rest of the state, there is a lot of them.
Mm. And is mosquito season getting longer? You mentioned the parameters of your studies. Was it April to October? Was that it? Is that stretching out farther than it used to?
Well, we're on the field at least from June to October.
June to October.
Yep. But yes, we are seeing some of the floodplain, snowmelt and floodplain species coming off a little bit earlier in the year. What environmentalists call the shoulder seasons, which probably maybe everybody calls it that, but you know, early spring and late fall are being pulled a little bit, so that there's a longer season for mosquitoes to breed and feed and to produce viruses in the population. So yeah, we are, and we're also seeing some effects of the flooding. So impounded water in places where it wasn't able to, you know, if a bank floods and floods a field, that can stay flooded, especially with all the rain that we had earlier. So those areas can breed mosquitoes like crazy.
Mm. Have you seen more mosquitoes in your area this year compared to other parts of your time in Vermont? Or does it feel like they've gone down? Call in and tell us about it. 800-639-2211 is our number. Oh, Patsy Kelso, we got an email from a listener named Steven who writes, "After the COVID-19 messaging experience, as they call it, I think it's important for media to show actual explanations of their methodology before trolls move in to generate resentment about unsubstantiated, overreach from authorities and the media. Oversimplification of a problem such as this one turned out to be an epistemic trap in the COVID-19 epidemic messaging. So it sounds like Stephen here is referring to the heated debates around how to keep yourself safe from COVID-19 and how to avoid transmitting it to other people. Patsy, what has the Department of Health learned from that experience during the pandemic that has informed how you talk to the public about other issues such as Triple E?
Yeah, we did. We learned a lot in the COVID response, and one of them was the importance of considering health equity. For example, when we did the press release at the end of August, urging people in high-risk towns to, you know, take precautions and avoid being outside when mosquitoes are most active, we recognized we needed that those messages translated into multiple languages so they're accessible to all Vermonters. So things like that we've learned. We're paying attention to health equity in that we are providing insect repellent wipes to homeless populations through other state partners. And then just trying to be credible and upfront and transparent in our messaging. So all of the data is on our website. Our recommendations are all on the website. Everything is straightforward, and you know, we try and communicate in a really clear manner. The thing with mosquito bite prevention and preventing these viral infections is it's not new information. We have history in Vermont with these viruses and lots of history across the U.S. So we know what the prevention messages are, and we're sticking with those proven methods. Mm.
Now, I've seen that there have been a couple of public events that have been canceled due to concern over Triple E, including a kind of outdoor food and drink and music event, a weekly event in Burlington, as well as Oktoberfest. And I've seen some pushback against those cancellations. I'm curious if the Department of Health has received any pushback from people who say that your response has been too much.
I haven't received that directly, but our communications team and our media team might have received some of that feedback. I think it's important to note that the Commissioner of Health and the Health Department made a strong public health recommendation, making sure that people in Vermont have the information they need to make decisions for themselves. We did not require that events be canceled. We simply made the strong recommendation to limit time outside or avoid being outside during the evening and early morning hours. It's up to local officials and event organizers and others to make those decisions about whether to change the times of events or cancel them altogether. And those decisions are made for a number of reasons, including protecting public health, but also logistical and financial and other reasons that the health department doesn't control. So we haven't made those requirements. We made the recommendation, and then it's up to organizers and individuals to choose what they decide to do.
Yeah, you mentioned the importance of transparency around your methodology and the recommendations the Department of Health makes. Patty, I'm curious to hear how folks who might want to learn more about your research and the data that you all collect at the Department of Ag beyond what we're talking about today on this program, if there is a way that people can access that information.
Yeah, the Agency of Agriculture publishes our data, on our website, and we have links from the Department of Health's website so that we direct folks to the Department of Health when they have questions about health. But if they're just interested in, you know, what we do and mosquito populations and the way the environmental factors can influence those. Our website is agriculture.vermont.gov, and people are welcome to go there or to follow up with me or anyone on my team for more information.
Let's talk about some. Oh, yes. Go ahead, Patsy.
One addition. We do have a state arbovirus surveillance and response plan that's on our website, and anyone can look at it, and it includes the criteria for what moves a town or an area from low to moderate to high risk. So those criteria are available for anyone to see, and that plan was developed jointly with approval from the Commissioner of Health and the Secretary of Ag. And so everyone can take a look at how we're making our decisions.
Mm. Yeah, and I was going to mention that, you know, the Health Department is, when they make the recommendations, it's based on something that's already been established. It's not something that, you know, they just sort of decide, you know, case by case. This is something that's been very carefully planned, and you know, there was an architecture in place for the response.
Right. Well, let's talk about some ways to stay safe from mosquitoes. Patty, first, how do you and your colleagues dress and keep yourself safe when you are out dealing with tens or hundreds or even thousands of mosquitoes at a time?
Well, I cover up. I have something called a bug baffler that is, it's a shirt with elastic bands around the wrists and the waist, and has a hood. And you can zip the hood off so that when you're driving, you can see.
Not but, scaring other drivers.
Right. Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. To go from site to site, I pretty much leave it on. It's uncomfortable and hot, but it does prevent me from getting bitten. And I wear long pants, and, you know, I also do tick surveillance, so I have a habit of tucking my pants into my socks and wearing boots.
Very chic.
Yes, it's a good look. I've been told that. And then I also use an EPA-registered insect repellent. I like Picaridin. I know some people like DEET, some people don't like DEET. I just find Picaridin is easier to apply. It's less kind of greasy and heavy, but it has the same, achieves the same thing. And then I try not to be out in my yard at dusk, which is when, this year in particular, I'm seeing a lot of mosquitoes in my neighborhood, and I haven't in the past. Mm. So we're just avoiding, or, you know, we have a fire.
Yeah. So. Well, Patsy, let's talk about insect repellents. You mentioned the wipes that the Department of Health has been handing out to some potentially at-risk populations. And Patty brought up DEET. Can you tell us about DEET? I know some folks are very wary of it. Others swear by it.
Yeah, Patty said EPA-registered repellent. That's the important thing. Mm. The EPA studies insect repellents for safety and efficacy, and repellents are registered to be effective against a certain thing, whether it's mosquitoes or ticks or something else. And so we think any EPA-registered insect repellent that's effective against mosquitoes is appropriate, and people can choose which one they prefer. Hmm.
We got an email from Genevieve, who says that they want to mention a CDC-recommended alternative to DEET-based insect repellent that is effective against certain types of mosquitoes that can transmit Triple E. Listeners can look for repellents containing oil of lemon eucalyptus as the active ingredient. These products all contain higher levels of the active ingredient, offer longer levels of protection from bites, and have the benefit of not melting plastic. DEET is a plasticizer. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I've used oil of lemon eucalyptus products myself. The other thing I would say is follow the directions on the label, because whether it's DEET or Picaridin or lemon eucalyptus, they all have different effective times. Mm. So you might need to apply them more often or less often. So just follow the directions on the label, whichever you choose to use.
Chris writes, there are some new products that use heat to evaporate an odorless mosquito repellent. They seem to work really well, and they say there's no adverse effects on humans. What's your opinion? Have either of you heard of these? All right, Chris, we haven't heard of them, so I mean, if it's working, it's working, but read the label, maybe do your internet research as well. We got an email from Danielle a call from Danielle in Williamstown. Danielle, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for talking about Triple E with everyone. I was wondering what percentage of mosquitoes in these test pools are showing it. You know, is it 1 in 100? Is it 50 in 100? What percentage is it? And in the different testing locations, is it appearing to be a pretty consistent number, or are there certain testing locations in different counties that were showing a higher percentage?
Thank you. Patsy Kelso.
That's a great question. I can say that so far we've tested just over 2,200 batches of mosquitoes, and 66 have been positive. So there are tons of mosquitoes out there. We're trapping and testing a tiny fraction of that, and then 66 out of 2,200 have been positive, whatever that percentage is. The information about towns that have had positive mosquito results is on healthvermont.gov.
Thank you, Danielle. Anything to add there, Patty? Thumbs up.
That covered it really succinctly. Yeah, we send in mosquito pools, which are a little vial of mosquitoes, all of the same species that were collected on the same date from the same location. So that's what's called a mosquito pool. So we send in a couple, up to, I don't know, 370 of those a week for testing. So that gives you a little idea of the amount of mosquitoes. We've actually collected and identified to species well over 100,000 mosquitoes this year so far.
Wow. We also received some questions from folks about spraying for mosquitoes, spraying a large swath of area. I'm curious if that is recommended and what the environmental concerns to, say, spraying your backyard for mosquitoes might be. Patty?
Well, there are certified applicators in the state of Vermont that will spray your yard for mosquitoes and also for ticks. People would have to do their own research on, you know, the effectiveness of that, of any given applicator, any claims that they make, and then, you know, the research that they want to do into the chemicals that are used to do that. It is effective. I have a trap site that is, I didn't know was adjacent to a yard that was being sprayed. I kept trying to figure out why I wasn't getting any mosquitoes in the trap, and then I found out that the area was sprayed. So so individuals can engage the services of an applicator. On a larger scale, that's a decision. If there were an emergency response, that's a decision that's made by the health department. Mm.
A listener named Ricky asks, how do you test a tiny mosquito for a virus?
Well, okay, I won't make any jokes. that we send in these pools with you know, a bunch of mosquitoes, and there's a BB in every vial with the mosquitoes, and they get whirled around into just a mosquito slurry.
Oh.
And then they get, yes, this is a very appealing conversation. They're then tested, and Patsy can probably talk to the laboratory process a lot better than I can, but we send those in and they're tested at the lab, so.
Okay, Kelsey, Patsy, you get the slurry, and then what?
Yeah, we don't test individual mosquitoes. We test a pool, whether it's 1 to 50 in a pool. And I'm not a laboratorian, but it's a polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, assay. And there's an extraction of the genetic material, and then they run this PCR assay and get results. I'm sorry, I'm not more competent to answer that question.
That was perfect. More detail, and you would have lost me. Rita in Lindenville writes, we live near the floodplain in the Northeast Kingdom. With all the rain, the mosquitoes are fierce this summer. Is there anything we can do in low-lying areas that have pooled water to reduce the mosquito population? And is Triple E a concern on the eastern side of the state yet?
So we have not found it in any mosquito pools outside of the Champlain Corridor on the west side of the state. And to my knowledge, we have not had any mammalian cases historically, either human or horses, over on that side of the state. We did engage in a study many years ago, a five-year study looking at antibodies in deer and moose to Triple E, all around the state in harvested animals during hunting season. And we did find that it was present largely throughout the state, Triple E, in the environment. But the only places that it appears to show up in abundance enough to show up in the mosquitoes and in mammals is in the west side of the state. Now, what you can do in those low-lying areas, standing water is where mosquitoes breed. They don't lay their eggs in moving water. They don't particularly care for fresh water. So those areas that pool up and impound water after, you know, a big rain or a flood. If you are the landowner or with a landowner's permission, you can use something called bits and dunks, which is it's a biological larvicide. A larvicide is something that targets and kills larvae. So mosquito larvae breeding in those areas, in those impounded waters, if you throw in this chemical, it's very targeted. So it's mm-hmm. unlikely to kill other species, other genera besides just mosquito species. So, and you can get those at the hardware store and home and garden centers. And it's a yeast. It's a sort of like a yeast. It's a yeast byproduct. It's a bacterial byproduct. So.
Thank you. And thank you, Rita, for writing in. We got an email from Sandy who says, we live near agricultural fields and we notice immediately when the fields have been sprayed with liquid manure. If the pits are not agitated constantly, the mosquitoes enjoy a perfect environment to grow. Ooh, well, best of luck with that. Sandy, wear your long sleeves, I guess. Let's talk vaccine. I hear that there is a Triple E vaccine for horses, but not for humans. Patsy, why?
There is a Triple E vaccine for horses, and that's important for people to know. I think horses need to get it annually. So that's a great way to protect your animals. There's not for people. I suspect it's because human cases of Triple E are so rare. There are only a few reported in the United States each year. And so I just don't know if it's economically feasible to develop a vaccine when there are so few human cases.
Mm. And are there other mosquito-borne illnesses other than Triple E and West Nile that folks should be aware of or have their symptoms on their radar?
In Vermont, we're mostly concerned about West Nile and Triple E. There's another mosquito-borne virus called Jamestown Canyon virus that we probably have in Vermont. We have no documented human cases of it, but there have been cases of it in other New England states in recent years. So it's probably here, but at low levels. And we hope to be able to test mosquitoes for that in the future as well.
And then lastly, we got an email from a listener named Petya, who has a question about mosquito mitigation, which we touched on earlier. Petya writes, many eco-friendly countries around the world successfully balance mitigation and the environment. Is Vermont considering being more proactive with mosquito mitigation in light of the growing population of mosquitoes and the risk they pose to humans and animals? Patty?
Well, I would just say from the proactive end of things, no, in a short answer, because it's a very big undertaking. Mm. And states like Florida, Texas have, you know, very well-funded programs where they larvicide and adulticide. So in Vermont, there are two small mosquito control districts on the west side of the state that do engage in larviciding. So, but from a statewide standpoint, that's probably not something that the state's going to engage in. And Patsy probably has some more to say about that.
Yeah, the existing mosquito control districts are for nuisance control. They're not to control disease-carrying mosquitoes. And we would only recommend spraying pesticides to kill mosquitoes or mitigate the risk if we felt that the risk was really very high. Again, that's outlined in our state plan. People can take a look at that. And we wouldn't spray without that determination that the risk was high enough, followed by public notification, public meetings, and an opportunity for public input.
Vermont State Epidemiologist Patsy Kelso with the Vermont Department of Health. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
We are also joined by Patty Casey with the Vermont Department of Agriculture. Patty, thank you and stay safe out in the field. Keep
thank
those
you.
Long sleeves on.
Yes, thank you.